Welcome to the Callaway Golf Podcast, part of the Callaway Podcast Network. Here's your host, Jeff Newbarth.
What's going on? Welcome to the Callaway Golf Podcast. Why am I doing the intro? You should do it. You're the professional announcer.
I think I've trained you well enough now, Jeff. Or maybe you've trained me.
Well, normally I hear your voice first. Normally it's like, you know, welcome to the Callaway Golf Podcast. Here's your host. But I don't know.
Is that what I sound like? That's your best imitation of me? Come on.
No,
give me
I don't
your
do
best
imitations.
Open.
I do not do imitations of people because it's never going to sound good. In case you're just listening and you're not watching the video live, Jeff and Amanda. So that's Amanda Balionis. She's going to be playing in a pro-am this week. So we're going to break down how she plans on winning the QBE. Because if you know anything about Amanda, she's a little competitive. And she's not going to... So I don't know. Do you know who your pro is yet? Or is that to be determined?
No. So I'm just in... I think that's all TBD. But I'm pretty sure that some poor unassuming group is going to be stuck with me as opposed to maybe a PGA Tour player for the one say pro-am, which is unfortunate because I can't tell you how often I get drafted in these pro-ams and I meet my group and they say, where did you play college golf? And I'm like, oh no, I play volleyball. I'm a fun golfer. Like, and then, you know, by the end of the time, I'm, you know, they're all testing out my clubs and we're all having a great time and maybe some music's playing. But there's been a couple of times where I've been drafted with people thinking we're going to win the pro-am, not just win being the most fun group, which is unfortunate. So hopefully whoever drafts me tonight is aware.
Well, you still can't take the cake. The worst one I ever had was last year at Safeway. So I guess 2 years ago at Safeway, all the players, the planes from, they were playing the week before in Jackson, Mississippi and trying to get to Napa Valley, which was not easy. So the United plane, which had half the tour for the Monday Pro-Am, was delayed. So none of them were going to make it. So they drafted Tim Mickelson to play in the Pro-Am. So Tim, who happened to be there early, just scouting the course before his brother came, was literally running around the Callaway truck trying to put together a set of clubs to use because he didn't have any clubs. So we're just giving him whatever. And this group showed up on the seventh tee and they saw Mickelson and they could not have been more excited. And then they saw Tim Mickelson and they were slightly disappointed, but then they ended up having a really good time.
You know what though? Tim's going to be the guy that can give you all the stories that you never knew you needed. So that he ends up being a sneaky good playing partner.
All right. So let's get to, we have tons of questions. So we want to hear from you on either Facebook or Twitter or YouTube. And I will ask Amanda your questions. The number one question, this is a great question from Sean. Why are you a Steelers fan, given that they're no longer an undefeated team and that the Dolphins still forever the only perfect team? I may have added a little bit to the question.
Wow. Yeah, that doesn't feel like that is from Sean, but you know what? I'll take 11-1 any day of the week. And I will, you know, you're born a Steelers fan. You die a Steelers fan. It's just in your blood when you're born in Pittsburgh. But I will say after watching the game, I got to watch the game on my flight yesterday, which was a painful source of entertainment, I guess. But we got to get some things going with that offense. This is not going to be a Super Bowl bound team if we can't get some of our issues figured out.
Yeah, and shameless self-promotion. How good is it that my Dolphins get Romo and Nance? I think the last time we had Romo and Nance was like when Romo was playing and Nance was like calling a game. It was like one of the Christmas Day Cowboys-Dolphins games. I couldn't be more excited for Chiefs-Dolphins. The fact that, I mean, no one expects us to win that game, but 8-4, take that every day of the week.
Listen, you guys are, you should expect to at least be competitive. I mean, you guys have earned that right this season, and they've been on CBS a lot this year. They've been in a lot of our featured games, not quite with the like you said, the Roman
Romance
crew, you guys have made it.
Yeah, and Matt Browning, he's taking some questions in the background. I don't know if you know this, Amanda, he's a Bengals fan.
Oh well, you know, he can't be perfect. It's okay.
No All right, Rick wants to know, what is the go-to club in your bag? I'm sure your pro-am team's gonna want to know this too.
So it depends on the day. I've been having this really fun game with my bag recently. Well, I haven't played in a couple months, so I should play really. I'm really looking forward to this tomorrow.
You play great.
We've been deep into football mode recently. But my driver, my Maverick driver, has just been, when it's on, I mean, I'm out driving everybody in my group. When it's not on, and it is completely user error when it's not on, it has to be my putter. And you know what? I just changed back from my Tuttle, which, you know, I love my Tuttle.
Yeah, you love the Tuttle.
Putter and golf. But I just switched back into my Toulon San Diego. And I forgot how good those Toulon putters are too. So those are going to be the two go-to, hopefully go-to clubs in my back.
I'm all Atlanta. I've been using my Atlanta Toulon Atlanta putter for well over a year. That thing is not coming out of the bag. Super excited about it. The good news is, and Amanda doesn't know this, is you know, obviously we've seen one of our competitors, you know, launched a new driver today. The goal of this podcast is for us not to launch next year's driver and mention it. And the great news is we haven't even told Amanda about it. So there's no chance of doing it.
Because, you know, I come from the camp when I first started at Callaway, we were totally allowed to just sneak some.
I don't know if we were totally allowed to. We just did.
We just did it. So now you have completely taken that power away from me, which I appreciate. Yeah,
it's going to work. And the other thing is on the day that it does launch, we get the genuine excited reaction of Amanda, as opposed to everyone else who's known about it for 6 months. So it definitely, there's strategic reason and strategic value in this. All right. Mary wants to know, have you always wanted to be a sports announcer, or did you have a different dream career?
Yeah, no, always wanted to be a sports announcer. When I was in middle school, I remember watching a Steelers game. Bonnie Bernstein, who was at CBS, was on the sidelines. And I was like, man, I want to do that. Like, I want to be as close to the action as possible. And majored in sport and broadcast journalism, interned for the Jets, the Islanders, ABC, CBS. I did have a brief stint at Us Weekly magazine because I thought maybe I wanted to be in entertainment, and then quickly realized that Googling, like, when's the last time Brad Pitt showed his butt in a movie was not going to be sustainable for me. So it just confirmed that sports broadcasting was what I've always wanted to do. And I'm lucky enough to be able to do it.
Great. Do you know when the last time Brad Pitt did that or not?
I can't remember now. Okay. I will never forget having to Google that, though, for 2 hours in a little cubicle as an intern.
See, that's how we date ourselves, because when I was coming out of broadcast school, we didn't have Google. So we actually had to do LexisNexis searches and all that type of stuff.
Who's LexisNexis?
Yeah, exactly. All right. To Catalyst, our buddy Clayton wants to know, as your career has flourished, do you still get jitters before doing on-camera interviews?
Yeah. I mean, I think if you aren't feeling that surge of energy and kind of nervous excitement, you don't care anymore. And, you know, I've talked to Jim Nance about that too. He still gets that, you know, I think that surge of nervous excitement, especially for our big event. So I don't think that's anything that goes away. I hope it never goes away, because I also think that adrenaline I get before doing interviews, or, you know, my opening hit in an NFL game, whatever it is, I think that's actually what allows me to laser focus and do my job in a live environment. I think if I weren't feeling that and didn't have that tunnel vision, I don't know if I'd be able to perform the way that I'm required to.
Yeah. And that's where I'll say, you know, just adding to it, because maybe we can help some people who want to get into broadcasting, is, like, I know when I'm doing something, I don't get nervous. It's more excited. And one of the things that I work on is I tend to talk fast anyway. And put a headset on me and put me in a truck with 80 monitors in front of me. I talk really fast. So those are things I try to work on. But if you don't have that, I think it's not as much nervousness, Clayton. I think it's more like anticipation, because the difference is, like, you know, when you're going to do the interview, you're going to be successful, because it's not braggadocio. It's just, it's confidence, because you've been practicing, you're prepared, you're ready, and you know you can do this. But you have that little moment of, like, well, it's still live. Like, and I think that generally in TV, we're trained is not how do I do this right? It's how do I avoid everything that could potentially go wrong while I'm trying to do it right?
And that's one
of the things that we do.
Yeah. And I think it's also the self-talk. Like, I've been working a lot this year on positive self-talk rather than saying to myself before, you know, NFL opens are something that are just so different. You know, in golf, I have the smart cart behind me. I know exactly when it's coming. It's very predictable. It's a more controlled environment for golf. Football, it's not as controlled. So things do change literally 10 seconds before you're about to go do something. And I've had to really work on my self-talk this year on not focusing on what can go wrong, but telling myself I know what I'm doing and I'm going to be fine and go do your job. So I think that positive self-talk also calms down those nerves a little bit too.
Yeah. And the worst thing you could do is be so scripted that when you say something to a player and then they give you an answer that begs for the follow-up, that you're just so focused on just following your script that you miss the follow-up. So it definitely, and it's also good, I think you've mentioned it, that this year for the first time in football, you've had a consistent crew that you've been working with. So you're, you know, not that you don't hear lots of voices in your head, because we all do, but to be able to have the same consistent voices in your head who know you, who you know who they are, who you know that they have your back, and are making sure that they're listening with you to make sure that everyone's on the same page. I think that that teamwork aspect of television is something that people who don't see it can't put a value on it.
Oh, 100%. I think that's what makes our golf team so wonderful is they've all been working together behind the scenes in front of the cameras for over 20 years, 30 years. So those are the types of things, you know, and we talked about that, the winning interview at the Masters that I got to do, and everyone was asking about that moment when I really had a chance to sit back and think about it. Really, to me, what made that moment successful was I was so caught up in the moment with the winner that I knew that Lance Barrow, our recording producer, was going to tell me when to move on. And but you really had to trust that, right? Like I trusted that he knew where my mind was at and that he understood the moment and that he was going to get me out of it when it was time to get out of it. So it allowed me to do my job to the best of my ability, but that is all trust, and that trust doesn't exist without, you know, amazing teamwork.
Yeah. We're here with Amanda Balionis on the Callaway Golf Podcast. Lots of good podcasts this week. Lex and Sarah had two friends of yours, Kira and Michelle Lee, on Girls in Golf, U.S. Women's Open this week.
Love that.
You know, I know that's an event that probably you'd love to cover, given the chance. What makes the Women's Open such much-watched TV for you? I love what they're doing. I think the USGA really got it right by playing two golf courses to make sure that we're not going to have issues with daylight or whatever, if there is weather. What do you love most about that event?
I mean, listen, I think anytime it's a major championship, men or women's, it's must-watch TV. And I think that's what we kind of got to – we have to start drilling that into people's minds, that it's not just the four men's majors that are must-watch. It is – It's the women's majors as well. And I thought the USGA did a really good job of reminding everyone after the Masters, hey, there's still one left, you know, and kind of just reminding people these are the best women in the world. And the stories are insane in the action. I mean, the game that these women have is it's elite, right? And I'm not sure if we really as a whole in the sports world give the women enough credit like we do the men. It's almost like a given how good the men are, right? Like we know what we're about to go watch is insane. I'm not sure if we give that same respect yet to the women that they deserve. And I guarantee you, if you tune in to the US Open, to the US Women's Open, you're going to give them the respect that they deserve because you're going to see just how unbelievably talented and skilled and aggressive these women are and how they tear up this golf course and overcome the challenges the same way the men do. So to me, that's the big thing. It's we never have to tell people why a men's major is worth watching. You know what I mean? So I think it's like, hey guys, yeah, it's a major championship. Like these don't come around very often. And these are the best women in the world competing on one of the best courses and best condition courses because of the USGA. In the world, like you should go watch it and you should frame it the same way as we frame it as the men's majors.
And I think one of the big differences to me that I think has not validated because it's always been valid. I think the shift of playing quote unquote more recognizable golf courses really helps, you know, playing Jackie Burke's Club 100%. In Houston really helps. I'm really excited for a couple of years when the ladies go to Pebble. I think that's going to be a huge moment in the game. Because you can get prime time. Which prime time we just know it always helps golf when you put it on late on the West Coast. But also just playing courses like when Michelle won her major at Pinehurst the week after the men were there. I think just more courses that are generally recognized as elite by everybody because you know like the, you know, we haven't seen champions skate on the, or champions club on the PGA Tour since they had the tour championship. I think when like Bernard Langer was still on the PGA Tour. So this is a great chance to see a legendary golf course. Right, we got so many.
Well, and also
here.
I think that's why just quickly. I think that's why the Augusta National Women's Amateur 2 years ago, obviously we missed it, was so successful because viewers at home. They were able to relate it and frame it in the same way that they frame the men's. I think that's a great point. That's what we should be doing. If the women should be playing on more recognizable courses or making those courses that they're playing on as recognizable as possible before they get there. So
agreed. All right. Lots of questions here. Alex, our good buddy Alex wants to know, what's your go-to break the ice drink during your pro-am rounds? And this is an important question because pro-am rounds are not quick. Yeah. So you don't want to go, you know, harder. you got 5 hours.
You got to pace yourself. I always come to the course with a coffee. Jeff, you know this, the coffee addiction is real. And then I always start with the transfusion. I hope that they have them. I would say oftentimes when I play in these events, there's always someone who doesn't know what a transfusion is. And then you order it and you change their lives right off the bat. So my golf game doesn't impress them, but my golf course cocktail knowledge does. So, but that is the go-to. If they don't have transfusions, I'm always going Tito's soda, splash of lemonade. And that is a perfect daytime, all day drink to sip on.
All right. I got lucky. We had this weekend the blueberry lemonade cocktails. I guess you know where we were. So those were pretty nice. Thanks, Hideaway. All right. John Flynn wants to know, who do you admire in the game of golf and who would you want to teach you on your golf game? Two totally separate questions, but are good ones.
Who do I admire in the game of golf? Man.
We only have 10 minutes, so don't list everybody.
I know. That's a hard one.
Rephrase that. Who do you admire that people probably wouldn't think of? Because obviously the obvious names are going to come up there, and I don't want you to just throw those out there. Yeah. But who's someone like kind of underrated or someone that you didn't know until you got to know them? Like, wow, this person's really an awesome person. I love what they do with golf.
There's in terms of like a player or like someone in the golf media. I need to be producing
any of the above.
I need more direction.
I mean, I would say you know, let's keep it to Elaine you're familiar with on that CBS crew. I mean, you know, there's so many people that you work with who are kind of under the radar because they're not holding a microphone, wearing a blazer, kind of out front. Who are some of the people on your team that help, you know, kind of do what you do without getting kind of the recognition, you know, forward face?
Yeah. I mean, we have the behind the scenes team for our entire CBS broadcast, but specifically for the smart cart area, which is what I do. And I try and plug them as much as possible. They are the unsung heroes. And I will say, someone I really admire is my cameraman, Jordan. And Jordan is, I'm not kidding you, he has been like the anchor to our team since day one. And every year he tries to kind of leave us and keep moving forward. And every year I throw a fit because I'm like, I don't know what I would do without you. Doesn't matter what's going on in his life, personally, professionally, and he's had some tough times recently, family-wise. He is the same guy. He shows up so happy, ready to work, detail-oriented, so positive. And he sets the tone for the rest of us. Right. And he's always a great reminder of like, it doesn't matter what else is going on. We get to do this for a living. Like we get to show up to the best golf courses in the world and, you know, and broadcast television and interview, you know, the best athletes that people would pay money to talk to for just a couple of minutes. So he really does. He sets the tone. He calms me down. I'm a little, Jeff knows this, I'm a little high strung. I'm a perfectionist. So if things in my mind don't look and sound the way I think they should, I sometimes can drive everyone around me crazy, including myself. And he's the guy that I look at and he makes eye contact with me. He's like, we're good. Calm down. Go get it. And he carries the weight of that, of our smart cart team, day in and day out. And then what was the second? Oh, who I would want to be on my.
If you were going, you know, like, let's just call it right now. I think you were about to announce in this pod, you're going to play in a future Women's Open because you're going to try to qualify. That's the goal. We don't know what year, but who's going to be your go-to instructor to help on your game?
Oh, David Ledbetter. And it's not even close. That poor man, because Hallie Ledbetter and I are such good friends. I can't tell you how many times I've called David on the golf course. And I'm like, well, the ball's going sideways again. I don't know how to fix it. And he is so funny, but he is so brutally honest, but in a way that you respond to. And he can, it's just like little things. And he describes it in a way that I understand immediately. He's the guy that I will always call. And if I could someday, you know, afford to actually hire him as my full-time coach, I would do that. And then maybe you would see me on, no, you would never see me.
But what an opportunity for David Ledbetter to give up coaching, you know, tour pros and elite juniors and everything and just full-time be Amanda's golf coach.
I should talk to him about that. He might be open to it.
I mean, what if we just do that? We should just do that for like just a week, like literally just have you in bed in Camp Ledbetter and see what happens after a week of like tour level instruction.
I'm not kidding though. He would, it would be worth it just for the comedic relief that he provides unintentionally. He is so, he's so freaking funny. And I don't know if he gets enough credit for that.
No, no. And he's definitely, we're seeing it more and more lately. I think that having Ali do content with him shows us all that. All right. Peter William on Facebook wants to know, how would you increase junior girls' participation in the game?
You know, that's a good question, because my parents tried to get me involved in golf and it did not go well. I think because I was so team oriented and I just wanted to be with my friends. I'm an only child. So I really wanted to be around kids my own age as much as possible. So golf at that time didn't feel like an option, but PGA Junior League, they're doing an incredible job. They've made golf for juniors and younger kids a team sport. You get your own jerseys.
Yeah,
you get,
so good.
You know, and, but you know, even if it's not PGA Junior League, the first tee, that go find a first tee near you. Just go find something where these kids are going to be put together in more of a group environment and a fun environment. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't give them the time to really get down on themselves, because I can tell you, I took lessons and I would just beat balls on the range. And I'm like, why am I hated it, you know? So yeah. I don't think that was not the right approach, but also the programs that are available now were not available then. But I think that's the way to keep, and go out and have fun with your kid on the golf course. Like, my best memories of playing golf when I was younger was going out with my dad and him letting me play in the bunker while he practiced his short game. Or he would, you know, give me a quarter for every putt I made or something like that.
Get to drive the golf cart.
Yeah, you get to drive the golf cart. Just doing fun stuff and bonding with your kid out there. If that's what they connect golf with, is being with their family and friends, it's going to keep them coming back.
Yeah, and I think you hit it right on the head. So at our club here in San Diego, Josh and Nate run you know, great junior program, but this PGA Junior League, you know, the kids are all out because we play a lot on Sunday afternoons, and they're out there in their jerseys with the numbers and everything. And the two greatest numbers I saw were from the Tahoe division. These two kids with the last name McGee got to wear number 59 for their PGA Junior League. That's like awesome. How amazing is that? You walk up to the first tee and you see like, McGee, why are you wearing 59? Oh, 'cause my mom's Miss 59. Like, you're no way you're losing a junior league game. But seriously, the competitive
unless Charlie Woods is in the field, and then everyone's
we're all going to get to see. We're all going to get to see that. It's pretty exciting, right?
I can't wait. It is really exciting. Yeah.
All right. We got a couple more minutes with Amanda here, because you have stuff to do. I have stuff to do. Ethan's going to be mad at me if I'm late to a meeting. Who's the easiest interview for you? And this is a better question. Who's the hardest interview? And let's keep this to golf, not football.
Yeah, I would say the easiest interview, simply because they are so insightful and thoughtful with their answers, is probably Rory McIlroy and Jon Rahm. I mean, those two, whenever they come up to the mic or to scoring, I'm so excited to talk to them, because I know they're gonna walk away and I'm gonna have more knowledge, and fans at home are gonna have like a moment that they really think about from that interview, no matter what. Difficult interviews. You know, there really aren't a whole lot of difficult interviews. There really isn't. I mean, there are certain players where you have to make sure you're asking the right question, right?
Like, well, but I think the difficult part is when someone, you know, because unfortunately, when they talk to you on a Sunday at a major, it's normally not a good thing. So yeah. I think it's not about a particular person being difficult; it's a situation, right? So when you have to interview someone who just doubled a hole. Like I would argue the interview with DJ, you know, back at Chambers Bay when he literally, you know, three putted to throw away a US Open that was clearly in his grasp. That's not an easy interview. It's nothing against DJ. It's just the situation, right? That's where it's tough. Because in football, you don't do
it
that.
Is.
You don't interview the loser when you're doing the sideline report for the most part. Maybe you do later after the fact, but normally you interview the winner at that point.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that Sundays of the majors that we get to cover, I always say that's like our doomsday, because no one wants to be talking to me.
No. Bill McAtee said that for years when he did it. He said, everyone wants to talk to me on Saturday. No one wants to see me on Sunday.
Yeah. And, you know, I think my job, if they're willing to talk, because I think sometimes we forget too, these guys don't have to talk to us. So they are choosing in a really vulnerable, kind of like sad place, to still come on and talk to us on CBS for the fans, which I think is wonderful. So I really try to just have a positive perspective. Because listen, if you're in contention on Sunday at a major to the point where we're talking to you, which means that you're at least a top three finish, unless your name is Tiger or Phil, You know, then we might be talking to you anyway. But if you've put yourself in that position, you got to take some silver linings from that and think that you're going to consistently put yourself in. Like, I'll never forget that Xander Schauffele interview a couple years ago at the Masters when Tiger won and Xander waited. And he could not wipe the smile off his face because he realized that he could do this.
Totally.
And I think those are the positives that you try to take away from guys. You know, a Rory McIlroy is a lot tougher because, as he told us this past year, there's a lot of stress. He knows what he's trying to accomplish, and he cares about it so much. So that one's not as fun on Sundays when he knows that, you know, another year went without him being able to, you know, achieve history. And we kind of know that it's hard to consistently put yourself in that position. But for the most part, if you can take a positive spin on it, those guys are going to be pretty open to looking forward as well.
Absolutely. I also think the other interview I love at a major is, especially the ones that you're on forever, is talking to someone who shoots a low round early in the day on a weekend who, they're not going to win the event, but it kind of previews the golf course for us and lets us know how it's going to play later in the day because they've literally just experienced it. I always think those are good ones. We don't do enough of those anymore. You know, because like there's so much stuff you got to jam into a broadcast now.
There, and I mean, now with the emphasis of only show live golf, we don't care about anything else. Well, then you start, it's a give and take, you know?
Right. Can we just help America? Let's just second screen. All we have to do is record these things and put them out there on whether it's the CBS social channel or whoever's running the event social channel. We don't need to see it live in the broadcast. There's enough commercials. We can figure out a way to watch it if we want to. It's good content.
Okay. I'll send that request along.
Yeah, please do. All right, Amanda, you have a pro-am to get ready for. I expect shot-by-shot analysis. If anyone's going to be in the Sarasota area, we'd love to have an Amanda tracker, just like we do for Tiger and some of the other players.
Yeah, where's my tracker?
I don't know. Well, what's you know what? Maybe is your mom playing in the pro-am? Because I just found a job she could be doing during the round.
My mom is actually holding down the fort for me back in San Diego with Arnie Palmer, the Frenchie.
Oh. Wait, yeah. Arnie Palmer's out here?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I live like 15 minutes, so I'm going to go see Arnie Palmer because dogs are entering my world now too. So I'm excited about this. Thank you for spending some time with us as always. And other than the Steelers, best of luck as the rest of the holiday season rolls on.
All right. Appreciate it. Thanks,
Jeff. Now we're competitive. Now my team's actually going to be potentially a playoff team. I actually have to root against other teams, even though I need you to beat the Bills this week. Beat the Bills for me this week, and then I'll be very happy.
You're going to be insufferable if the Dolphins do anything that involves the P word.
Some people on the team would say I'm already insufferable. All right, Amanda, thanks so much for spending some time with us. This is actually going to be the last Callaway Golf podcast of the year because you know what happens this time of year? There's lots of stuff coming out we're not allowed to talk about. And I just personally feel it's like disingenuous to like try to talk to people and then ignore kind of what's out there. So we're not going to do that. So we're going to take a couple weeks and just work on getting stuff ready. But we're going to come back in January with some stuff you're not going to want to miss. That's all I can say.
I can't wait to find out what it is.
I know. It's pretty exciting. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks to Jen, Matt, and Joyce for providing all the great questions and help in the background. And we will see you, I guess, in 2021, which thankfully will be a lot better than 2020. Thanks, everybody.